Welcome to the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast with me, Kathy Love. I'm a business coach who helps allied health professionals run powerful and profitable businesses in the disability sector. Join me for cutting-edge interviews with leaders in the allied health and business fields, along with plenty of practical content that you can use to make your business practice perfect. Hello, everyone. Kathy Love here. Joining me on today's podcast chat is Emily Lively, who is the founding director of Lively Eaters in Adelaide. Welcome aboard.
Hi, Kathy. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure, pleasure. We were having a little bit of a nervous giggle about the transition of not introducing yourself as an OT or a speechy, but as the boss person of a really serious enterprise. So how do you typically introduce yourself nowadays?
I'm practicing to introduce myself as the director of Lively Eaters, but I'm still in that transition phase of I run a private allied health practice and I give a big long explanation, not a big long one, but an explanation about what it is. And then I tack on that I'm a speech pathologist by trade. So I'm practicing not having all of that additional information and just talking about what I do here at Lively Eaters.
And practice is exactly what it takes, because you've got to shift it in your mind first and shift it in your thinking, and then the words will just be a whole lot more comfortable.
Yes, I agree. And I think that change in, although I've been, you know, working at Lively Eaters for 10 years, I think that change in my mind is actually only just occurred in the last year or so. And as I've, I guess, looked down on the business from on high, rather than being swarmed in the business and thought, no, actually, I want to take a different path with this now. So I think that change and that mindset has also come with the acceptance of where I need to be with the business as well. So it's not, the words don't just come, I think, without you actually making that change too.
Yeah, that makes sense. So briefly, run us through the last 10 years, maybe the highlight reel.
Highlight reel. It's all so much of a blur because I started when I had an 18-month-old and I was pregnant with another little one as well. So I remember doing my first intensive program at about 36 weeks pregnant. And so from there on, it's just been a blur of babies, children, business. But basically, we've gone from a team of myself and a colleague to a team of 11.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's really lovely to work in this environment with OTs, dietitians, speech pathologists. We have an amazing infant mental health specialist. We have an adolescent mental health specialist, and we have our paediatrician as well. So just to be able to really focus on children's eating challenges or family eating challenges, but have that wealth of knowledge is a really wonderful way to work.
Did you think it would end up like this 10 years down the track?
No, never. I never set out in private work to build a business. It was more around I felt constrained by what I could or couldn't offer in the public health system. I knew that there needed to be another way of working with families to make more of a difference. And so that was my emphasis, really, and that was my reason to start up some private work. I certainly didn't go into it with a business model and a business mindset and I need to start this new business and you know, no business plan, no nothing.
I think you've just ticked three very, very common boxes of started on maternity leave. Realised you had to leave the public sector to make a difference. And no plan, but just a lot of optimism really.
Yeah, I think so. And that was pre-NDIS as well. So, you know, there wasn't even that much guarantee of work, or not that NDIS is a guarantee of work, but, you know, it was a very different funding model. And you were mostly banking on private health insurance or people that could afford the out-of-pocket. So it was also a very different way, I think, to start up business compared with if I were going into it now.
So what were the big change points in the 10 years?
Probably a big one was the interest in our intensive feeding programs, and therefore what that meant in terms of how often they ran, how many staff were, you know, were trained or had the experience to be able to work in that kind of therapeutic setting. So, you know, that was a big one. When we moved from a single room that I rented in a physio practice into our own, you know, whole big building, and then had empty rooms that I thought, oh, my goodness, I've got this big space and empty rooms and what am I going to do? You know, so that was a change point. And then I think each time, you know, staff members changed as well, because I used to work on a contractor model. So each time contractors changed, it would change the dynamic of the team, I guess, or the way we worked, bringing someone new in without necessarily having a progression plan in terms of staffing, so it would always kind of change the dynamic a bit, and we'd need to resettle. But, you know, I've always had such an amazing group of therapists that it's always been just the next step, or, you know, okay, well, they bring this to it, so actually that's a really good idea. So that's been refreshing as well. And then more recently, just the change in business structure has been a big key point for the business as well.
So do you still currently have independent contractors, or have they become employees over time, or a bit of both?
Yeah, I do have mostly employees. A couple of girls remain as independent contractors, and they really are in that capacity as a contractor. They do manage everything. They see a handful of clients that they work with, but they really are independent contractors now, and the rest of the team are employees.
Mm. Lots of businesses have both, and it can work really, really well if you know the difference and manage accordingly. I think it can be a really nimble model.
There's certainly certain types of clients or disciplines I find that does work really well with.
So what's this change in business model you speak of? Oh gosh.
It's given me sleepless nights and multiple samples of different gins from around the world.
Love it.
I guess it's been a culmination of following up on advice, you know, through your podcasts and presentations and conferences, and speaking to others around really understanding the numbers, having a great accountant, and understanding what everything means. And for a lot of years, our accountant was perhaps not the type of accountant that I needed for my brain and the way my brain works. And so making a shift to accountants was the first thing. And our current accountant is phenomenal. And I sit down with him every quarter. We go through the profit and loss. We go through expenses. We look at projections. We look at running costs. And it's been through, he's also helped us set up Xero properly, because the way I'd been using it wasn't quite reflective of the figures that, not the figures that we needed to see, but what was actually happening. So that's been a two-year transition, I guess, to make sure that the data we're looking at is actually really accurate, really up-to-date, and really reflective of what is happening with the business. And so it's been through that process that we've then been able to make some recommendations and make some changes.
I've got to say, the global gin consumption is totally worth finding your phenomenal accountant and getting your Xero set up and getting your head in the numbers. Totally worth it.
Absolutely. I mean, my gin consumption is worth anything, you know, anything worth some gin consumption.
But, yes, that's true. Yes. Silly me, putting it in the context of business success. That's right. Gin just stands alone.
But it's meant that I can make really big decisions around, no, this is what has to be done, and this is, you know, this is where I do to go. Mm. And so that's a scary decision, a scary reality. But at the end of the day, I guess one of my colleagues very interestingly phrased it to me as, for 10 years you've run a business based on what everyone else wants and can do, and you've managed to hold it together based on what 11 other people need for their lives and not what you actually need for your life. So having it phrased that way from an outsider also made me realise, yeah, actually we have been running it based on having the most brilliant staff, but yes, I'll take what you can do and I'll take what you can do and build a business that way. And I think it's just got to a point where now I'm actually able to look down on it and say, well, what does the business actually need to be able to sustain itself and grow and do new and wonderful things? And part of that was to have me have a bit more time to actually consider that, and also have that succession planning and have those team roles and have a more cohesive team that I didn't feel bad asking to do things that, you know, weren't just seeing clients. So it's been a big process and a big change.
And in the context of where our conversation started, that you're now introducing yourself as the director of a business that, you got your business boots on.
Yes. Slowly, they're kind of, you know, you can slip them on but easily get them off. They're not laced up the top yet.
No buckles. Very good. So what's it like now being a director of a business?
Well, I'd like to say that it's not too different from what I was doing, except that I'm perhaps allowing myself a little bit of time to do that, because I'm trying to step back from clinical a little bit more. My week is pretty crazy between Lively Eaters, doing a part-time PA, so I'm supposed to be only 2 days a week, and also another business on the side that I started up 18 months ago. And so I've really had to contain my clinical stuff to my clinical day, not just I will see 7 kids in those days and then do all their reports and follow-ups and quotes and everything related to that child on top of that in other time.
In the night time.
In the night time. And so that's one big difference that I'm still working on, but I'm getting better at as the director, being able to say, no, I'm sorry, this is when my next available time is to do that bit of clinical work. I'm not fully out of the clinical, And I don't know if I actually ever thought it would be.
Oh, I love how you're answering my next question. What's the chance?
Well, part of our intensive program we run, you know, we have an amazing group of core girls that work in that program. So we all know how it works and how it runs and how each other thinks. And, you know, I don't know that I can ever let that go because I do love that work so much. And I think I'm happy to have a compromise between, yes, I can still do that clinical work. I'm not ready to do anything with that just yet.
For so many clinicians who find themselves as CEO, the clinical work will still bring joy and quite a blissful, familiar, interesting space for them to escape to from the realities of profit and loss statements and payroll and marketing and performance appraisals and whatever other manner of CEO behaviour. So I totally get it. I hear it a lot from owners of huge businesses. There's still a little bit of a side clinical hustle going on.
Yes, yeah. I think it's an important way to evolve, of still knowing what is happening on the ground and building knowledge and experiences that you can pass on to other clinicians as well. Yeah, we'll see where that one goes.
Yeah. So your team are wonderful, and many of them have been with you for a long time now. What do your team do brilliantly?
Oh, they're brilliant therapy. They have a really lovely way of engaging with families, but also a very open team. So they, it's quite common that we will sit in with each other on sessions and just pick up bits and pieces from each other. There's lots of communication around shared clients. There's lots of enthusiasm, so ideas are coming up, or let's do it this way, or let's do it that way. And so I find that really exciting, because sometimes my brain just doesn't have the time for the great ideas. They're really brilliant at that. And I also find they're really respectful of me, which I don't expect at all. It's really odd. They will often come back and say, "I just wanted to check with you. This is what I'm thinking." Da, 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 da. And I just think, do you know what? You have just as much experience as me. You know. But I find that really respectful that there is that. We're always just checking in with each other.
Yeah. Business management is one side of the coin, but the other is, you know, inspired leadership. So what do you believe you've done to create this amazing team from a leadership point of view?
Well, it's interesting you should ask, because it's actually on my post-it note chart of skills that I would like to improve is leadership skills, because it's something I've never done anything formally. So I don't actually know is the answer to that question. I have a very strong work ethic, and whether that flows through, you know, open to ideas and suggestions, and if someone says, "Why don't we just switch this whole room this way?" You know, yep, sure, let's do it, done. Why don't we think about such and such? So I'm not, my husband will tell you I'm very rigid and like things done in a certain way. There's another word
he uses. We're not talking to him. He's busy picking up the kids.
But I try to be flexible in thinking and other people's ideas, but I don't know that I'm a I don't know that I'm a good leader. I don't do anything specific, but it is something that I would like to work on and have a better understanding of.
My hunch is you're a way better leader than you have just described, and perhaps it's a piece around not yet identifying all your leadership ingredients and being able to kind of pull them apart and look at them and identify them and name them and all of that good stuff, which often comes down to time. Can't imagine you've got much spare time to gaze at the ceiling and think about your leadership qualities.
Well, that's very kind of you to say, but yes, it is something that I would like to understand better.
I'm going to put a plug in for Brené Brown's book. Have you read Dare to Lead?
No.
Now would be a really good moment for me to reach to my bookshelf and get it, but I can't see it, which makes me not nervous. Bit of a favourite book, I got to say, and Brené Brown's pretty outstanding on YouTube as well if you're not feeling like the book, but it's probably the book of 2018 that got the most highlighting and scribbling and sticky notes, and it's quite looking quite battered, but really interesting place to start with some thinking and challenging questions around leadership.
I will add that to my list. I'm currently reading is it Donna McGeorge?
Donna, the first 2 hours.
2 hours, yes. Yeah. So that's where I'm putting my thoughts at the moment.
Oh, we'll be able to put that link in the show notes, and she was on the podcast last year as well. So
yeah, I think that's where I heard of her work. So I followed that one up.
Yeah, love it, love it, love it. Now, several minutes ago, you said something about another business or a side hustle. I love a side hustle. It's got my ears prickled up. Is that something you can tell us about, or we just move on?
No, I think I can talk about it. I guess in my work at Lively Eaters over the years, we work with fed children, and a lot of the work that we do with families is helping them transition tube feeds from formula-based feeds to real food-based feeds. Mm-hmm. And we've seen anecdotally, I would love to do, and one day I will do the research on it, but the changes in the children but also in the parents when they can actually feed their children real food. And the, you know, from a parent point of view, they're feeling like they're actually cooking for their child for the first time, and they're, you know, they're giving their child real nutrition. I'm not saying that in a way that formulas aren't.
There were air quotes for those that were listening.
They were air quotes. And they feel so much better. For the children, anecdotally, you know, we've seen vomiting stop. We've seen them growing better. We've seen their skin not looking pasty white. We've seen them have energy, and we've seen their personalities change because their guts change in the way that they're working. And the process to make real food blend is time consuming, and it does require specific dietetic input to ensure that the children are receiving the nutrients that they need, but they are growing. And so it led to an idea that maybe we should have a pre-made, homemade blend that is commercially available or commercially made and readily available, like you would walk into a supermarket and grab a squeezy pouch off the shelf if you hadn't packed your lunch for your lunch. And so with business partners in Sydney, we started this journey 2 years ago, and we've spent about 10 months and copious dollar signs of research, development, testing. We're following very stringent Australian and New Zealand food standards guidelines, so it is highly highly analysed, and we thought we were nearly ready to launch towards the end of last year, and we just found a little hiccup with iodine of all my nutrients. Iodine reared its ugly head, and so we're tweaking that getting that just perfect so that it's ready to launch. And that's a 3-year plus product. We're also working with CSIRO at the moment to develop the pediatric specific 1 to 3 year old product as well.
Kudos to you.
Very exciting. We are very excited by it. I haven't told too many families about it, but I know a lot of families have said to me, I wish there was something that, you know, when we go on holidays, we don't have to pack the blender and suitcase of, you know,
stuff.
So, it's really exciting. And the product is called, or our brand is Whole, WHOLE, Enteral Nourishment. So it's everything's ready to just hit, you know, go once we've got this iodine under control.
So it's so exciting. What's the product going to look like? Is it squeezy tubes? Is it?
It's in a shelf-stable foil package.
Okay.
So it does have a shelf life of 18 months. It's made from real food. And we'll have, you know, whilst we can't meet the standard of, you know, not to be used as a sole source of nutrition, because that is a different Australian
level.
It is nutritionally complete. So, you know, there's a bit of interesting marketing and wordplay that we've been learning about. But yes, it's in a retorted aluminium soft mushable package, and families can choose how much they want to, you know, decant out per meal. And it's obviously made of the right viscosity to pass through a feeding pump and a syringe feed.
Wow.
Whilst maintaining nutrient density
and the integrity. So, goodness. And where will people be able to buy it?
Initially just online through our website, which is whole.net.au, and then we're looking at other avenues to distribute it once we have some support behind us.
Oh, absolutely remarkable, and such a learning curve as well. Just when you think you've got all the big words and the big concepts under your belt, boom, here comes a curveball.
Yeah, and it's been a really interesting process, because I've been in health my whole life. I've not been in marketing and advertising and product development. But I have been doing my PhD for 4 years, and the process of that has taught me that you don't need to know the answer tomorrow, and you don't have to have it ticked off your list tomorrow, and you don't have to have it completed tomorrow, and that actually the process is just as important as the end point. And I think without having that learning from uni, which has been hard for me to learn because that's not my way of working, without having that, I think I would have felt differently about this process. You know, each time we got results back that weren't what we expected or weren't what we'd been advised, or, you know, blips along the way, I don't think I would have handled them as well as I have. Not that I'm saying I've handled them all well, but
you know. What with the gin and all?
Exactly. But it's given me just a different way of thinking about the process, I guess.
Yeah. So given Lively Eaters and now whole.net, how would you describe your business thinking and your business approach to what you do?
I still just do what I'm passionate about doing. Yeah, I still just do what feels right for me and what I, you know, what I really want to do. So I don't think it's changed the fundamentals of why I do what I do.
And what can you tell us about, you know, the next 1-2 years for Whole.net and for Lively Eaters? What's on the, you know, on the strategy board?
Well, for Whole, we would like to obviously get this first product on the market, and then closely followed by our 1-3-year-old pediatric product, and then look at consolidating that in Australia, and then looking at international distribution of that. Who knows where that's going to go?
Because we're researchers and we don't know the answers yet.
It's worse when you're writing grants and people ask, you know, well, what's your predicted sales volume and what's your predicted consumer
use? Of course.
Well, there isn't actually any data on how many tube-fed adults and children there are in Australia. There's no central database. We could ring each hospital and say how many people are on your HENS program, but you know, so it's very hard. We can only go off American data predictions, but yeah, so that's where we see Whole headed. Lively Eaters, I'd just love to spend this next 1-2 years of just really consolidating the new structure, the new teams, onboarding some new therapists, and doing a lovely renovation here at our clinic, so that we have some more space, and some bigger, better rooms.
Oh, goodness, renovations. Gosh, got no advice on that other than think really carefully.
Yes, it's not going to be a quick process. It'll be lots of everyone's inputs, thoughts. We have a whiteboard up just outside our staff toilet, actually, and anytime anyone has a thought, they're just jotting it down on the whiteboard, so that, you know, we just end up at least with some thoughts on how we would like the space to be used, or how we can design it best for what we do.
That's a pretty hilarious location for the ideas board, isn't it? Either going in or coming out.
Well, that's when you have, you know, 2 minutes of the day just to have a little think.
Yes.
You think, oh, I need to add that to the board. So,
well, especially when you pass it on the way in, I think it's fabulous. Mm-hmm. I think it's great. I think, yes, people listening will be copying that. Perfect location. Perfect location. I want to really quickly ask you about the NDIS, thinking that you guys are probably pretty heavily involved in supporting your clients with the NDIS. How's that kind of working for you in Adelaide?
Well, we've been in the NDIS for the last 6, coming up 7 years, as we were one of the trial sites for the paediatric rollout or introduction. And so it's been an interesting process to watch the change to from trial site to rollout. I did a fair piece of work to decide whether I go down the certification or verification or not at all pathway. And I feel really comfortable with the decision that we've made, particularly from the 1st of January. I held off as long as I could, and then when they released on the 1st of January that proprietary limited companies didn't have to certify unless they were working with those under 7 age groups, that gave me you know, more scope to look at exactly how many of those under 7 age groups we have that are agency managed, and allowed a really clear decision around, you know, it's not a good use of our time perhaps to go down that certification pathway, but we'll certainly be verifying, going down the verification pathway.
Absolute game changer, that announcement at the end of last year.
I was getting really, you know, I was all set to do the certification, and I'd started gathering quotes and looking at what it involved. And so I think it allowed me to take a big sigh of relief, actually, and to be able to make that decision. And, we would always love to be able to help all children. at the end of the day, when you look at the figures and the numbers and what it involved, it just wasn't a viable business decision.
Yeah. So what have been the really big changes that you've seen over nearly over 6.5 years?
I guess the initial big change was the number of children that could be supported once it was introduced as a funding source for families that otherwise wouldn't have that opportunity. It then turned into, when they switched from the trial to the rollout, it then turned into an absolute nightmare, an absolute muddle. No one knew what was happening, what the processes were, you know, how we get paid. So the trial wasn't actually a trial of what was going to happen. The trial was just a trial, and then what happened was completely different from
a little taste of how good it could be
on the trial. Exactly. And so that was a really difficult time. And as families came on, we saw and still do see so much inconsistency around some families receive funding for this and some families don't, and some families receive extra and some don't. And so I think the big, every time they release a new change, it's the way it's disseminated, in that it's not disseminated, it's just we learn it through parents or trainers. And so I think that's a big part of when they make change, how it then impacts as a point of that pathway of how we then have to manage those clients.
Yeah. So overall, would you say that it's really supported your clients and really guided the way you do business?
It's absolutely supported our clients. I try not to think of it as the way, as a guide to how we do business. We still prefer to look at what does this child and this family need and what is the most functional and practical for them, and therefore this is what we are recommending, rather than trying to go into those silos of fortnightly therapy, fortnightly this, you know, weekly that. Shock you in a group, do a block of this. So I don't know that it's guided how we do what we do, but it's made it available for families. But we still recommend what we, you know, think is actually going to help that
make family. The biggest difference. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What changes do you think in your crystal ball, your NDIS crystal ball, what do you imagine they might be changing up on that line of therapeutic supports?
I've certainly heard that they're doing their own research into the validity of intensive therapy. So, you know, we do run an intensive program. We have had lots of families who have received funding for an intensive program. We've also had lots of families who've been declined it because in the words of feedback from the NDIS, there is no evidence to support intensive therapy. But I've heard that they are running some of their own programs and gathering some data on that. So it would be really nice to see some further support for that. Clearly it's not enough for us clinically to say we know that if we can do 40 hours in a week, we can make much more of a difference than if we do 1 hour a week for a year.
Yeah. So you're hoping for emerging models of practice?
I think so, and just getting out of some of that more traditional mindset of weekly this, fortnightly that, one of this, one of that. And more approaching it as actually if we do put the time and the effort into training, or the expertise into training the parents and the families and the carers, we're actually going to have much better outcomes for the kiddies than doing a one-on-one in a clinic setting.
Yeah. Oh, it's going to be fascinating, absolutely fascinating to watch what does and doesn't happen. And every quarter and every mid-year, everyone's back with their fingers crossed, holding their breath for what the next, you know, the next version is going to be. So it's, yeah, it's tension for everyone.
And it will be every year, you know, and every year when they release the price guide on the 30th of June, and then we have to justify to people, you know, not just the NDIS families because they're automatically adjusted, but the private families too, our prices, you know, potentially are changing, and what that means. It's always a bit of an uneasy time, I find.
Yeah. Oh, well, you sound, we haven't spoken for ages, but it sounds as though the last couple of years have been super, super solid and really building in great foundations, getting whole up and running. What are you most proud of about what you've done?
I probably enjoy the most when I get the text messages on a Sunday morning from a family of their child that, you know, that we weaned 2 months ago, 3 years ago, 6 years ago. Just we're thinking of you and here's little Johnny and look, he's standing with his face stuffed with food and, you know, loving life. So I guess I'm most proud that we can actually give that opportunity to families.
Yeah, the outcomes for the clients. It's so easy to get a bit of detachment from that in the busyness of business and with all the other bits and pieces you've got going on. But I probably say it most days. What is it you're achieving with clients? What is the pathway towards that? What is that impact going to be? So,
it's not just the, you know, the tube fed kids. I mean, we work with all sorts of children with all sorts of feeding challenges, but, you know, to be able to feed your child, and it's something you have to do five times a day, and it's the foundations for their learning and growing and brain development and every other form of development. It's pretty empowering when there are changes made in that area and the families can enjoy and reflect on that as well.
On that role. Ah, beautiful. You can have the last say. What kind of words of wisdom have you got out there for allied health business owners?
Oh my goodness, I don't have words of wisdom.
Yeah, you do. You have words. Let's just take out the wisdom. What words have you got? Don't be wise.
I think if there's an area that you're really passionate about, that's the area that you pursue. I would find it very difficult to stay as motivated in a business if it was something that I was doing because it looked like a good business plan or it had a good bottom dollar figure attached to it, or, you know, it's a lot of hours and a lot of work, and I think it just has to be what you really feel is right for you, not what looks like a good idea. And so having that passion is what helps drive it. I think I am learning to have boundaries around work and play, but I've very actively had to make those boundaries, and it's only been in the last year or so I've given myself permission to join a sports team and go to training, and, you know, I run and I've been training for half marathons, and I do that as my downtime, but I have to actually diarize it to make it happen. And so I think finding those boundaries and then really trying to stick to them to give you that break from the business is really important. And also for the family as well, to have not see me at the computer all day, every day. but once I pick them up from school, then it's kid time until they're in bed at night. So the passion and then the boundaries are big points.
I knew your words would be wise.
I think that I'm not sure if they're wise. I think they're just lessons learned the hard way.
Bit of scar tissue around them. I think plenty of business owners have got some scars around passion versus business, you know, viability versus boundaries or lack of. So I reckon you nailed it.
Yeah.
Emily, thank you so much for coming in for a conversation today and sharing where Lively Eaters and now where Whole is up to. I would love to invite you back to kind of share the adventure on Whole perhaps later in the year, and we might be able to give it a little bit of an online profile. So would that be all right?
I would love that. That would be lovely. Thank you. Yes, it's been enjoyable chatting. I do listen to your podcasts every week. So it's scary to think that I might have to listen to myself. I think I'll just delete that one.
Skip one. Oh, absolutely great to catch up. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Kathy. Cheers. See ya.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast. For show notes and other resources, please visit practicemadeperfectpodcast.com. While you are there, you can subscribe for future episodes and continue your business adventure with me. And please be sure to share this and other episodes with your friends and colleagues. The Private Practice Made Perfect podcast is brought to you by Experts on Air Podcast Network.